Welcome to San Francisco Ballet's Meet the Artist. My name is Catherine Barkman, and I'm a soloist at San Francisco Ballet. This podcast series of Meet the Artist interviews is your chance to get to know us, the dancers, musicians, designers, and choreographers at SF Ballet, as we discuss our lives, the process in the studio, performances on stage, and more. Join us for Meet the Artist interviews live and in person in the Opera House before Friday and Sunday performances. Or tune in all season long to hear podcast recordings of San Francisco Ballet's Meet the Artist interviews. Enjoy!
Okay, we're ready. So a formal welcome. Good evening to everyone. Welcome to this evening's performance of A Midsummer Night's Dream, choreographed by George Balanchine. And welcome to this evening's Meet the Artist interview. I'm Mary Wood for the San Francisco Ballet. Very pleased to be here with you. And I am more pleased that my conversation this evening will be with principal dancer Jennifer Stahl. Thanks.
Hello. Dan.
I want to start with a little introduction of Jennifer. I know we all feel as though we know her so well because you've been a member of the company for quite a long time and have risen through the ranks and danced, I think, just about every role in the entire repertoire. Jen was trained in Southern California with Maria Lazar. She was a finalist in both the Prix de Lausanne and the Youth America Grand Prix, YAGP, always tangle over that, competitions, which resulted in her getting a scholarship to San Francisco Ballet School. And she was taken in as an apprentice in 2005. She entered the Corps in, immediately, 2006. Was promoted to soloist in 2013 and principal in 2017. And those were sort of momentous, I remember, at the time. We've had fun conversations about those. We have seen over the years, Jen has an extraordinary repertoire, as I said, crossing the entire spectrum of styles in our rep, classical, contemporary, neoclassical, and maybe especially dramatic, maybe. She does it all well. In this season so far, she has danced the central character in Mere Mortals. How many of you were able to see that? Maybe a word or two about that shortly. And the lead woman in Macmillan's Song of the Earth. And then in this production of A Midsummer Night's Dream, we were seeing her both as Titania and Hippolyta, depending on which performance you're lucky enough to see. So again, thanks so much for being here. And with all of the work that you put into all of that repertoire, what do you do when you're not in the studio or on stage? What fills your time?
Nowadays, I try to fill my time with spending it with my daughter. I have a 3-year-old daughter, so that takes up most of my free time. And then otherwise, just self-care and rest and recovery and different things that feed my soul.
I think I read on the website that you do the New York Times crossword, and that's always impressive.
Yes, I like puzzles, and that is a nice way to start the morning and relax.
Back to having a 3-year-old at home, if you do the math, you had a very interesting pandemic layoff then.
Yes, I was pregnant the whole time, or beginning in I found out in April 2020, and yeah, it was a blessing in a lot of ways to have that solitude and resting period and time to be away when everyone was away from the theater and studio, and so it kind of took that edge off of missing that time and being able to give my body exactly what it needed while it was growing my baby and not have to hide the pregnancy for any amount of time or anything like that. And kind of come back when the company was also coming back into the studio postpartum, and for them just post-shutdowns. So,
well, so
I was very lucky.
In a way, that was probably its own blessing as well, because the company was coming back slowly compared to a full-on season.
Yeah, there weren't really performances yet, even when I was coming back. So it really was very fortunate on my end that, yeah, the pace was slower and everyone was just coming back for rehearsals, gearing up. And I joined for the first official performance in Stamford. That was my first performance back as well. And so the timing worked out really nicely.
I know that people ask any working mother, how do you do it? How do you do it all? And then they ask a dancer worker mother, as if it's somehow impossible or different. And I did hear a quote from another dancer saying, well, other mothers work and have children. What's your take on that?
Yeah, our schedule is very unique with late theater hours, and during the performance season, we work Saturday and Sunday and then have Monday. So it's really just trying to be just adapting to what time I do have. And I always have the mornings with my daughter. And then I ran home after rehearsals today and got an hour with her before coming back tonight. And I'll have tomorrow morning. So it's just fitting in when we do have the time. And then part of the year when we're not performing, we do have a fairly normal schedule, and I'm able to be there. So it's just adapting as week by week, and our schedule kind of varies. So, and yeah, I'm lucky to have a very supportive partner. So we just figure it out week to week.
Well, it's impressive, no matter what.
Bring her here sometimes, which she loves, and I'm grateful that I get to share this world with her, and she's able to grow up seeing many professionals working on their craft so intensely and diligently and with discipline, and getting to hear the music and see these productions that are magical, and her, you know, that helping with her imagination. So I just try to share what I can when I'm home and bring her here. And yeah,
this is the cliche question: would you encourage her to enter the world?
I don't have any major dreams for her too, but if she wants to, will support it. But I by no means will be pushing her into the world of ballet. I think there's plenty of other things for her to enjoy. So if she wants to, wonderful. If she doesn't, that's also great.
Well, let's turn a little bit to this breadth of repertoire that I keep talking about. We've seen you in a lot of contemporary work, and the choreographers come to set new works and they look at you and choose you. And I'm thinking the William Forsythe rep that we have, you've done a lot of that very prominently. You were very prominent in Mere Mortals, playing that role of Pandora, and I think it sort of brings all of the gifts you have for contemporary ballet to play. Talk about Mere Mortals. It was kind of awesome. I can't come up with a better word.
Thank you. I mean, as a whole, the whole production was phenomenal, and I feel very lucky to have been a part of it. Just the undertaking and all the elements that had to come together, the amount of teamwork that happened in the studio to figure out how to bring that vision to life was special to be a part of, and rewarding once we got it on stage, and to feel the energy of the audience being reflected back to us. All the energy we were giving was very special, and to feel it be received as it was wonderful. And I think you just never know with a new work how it's going to come across, and you hope for the best, but you just never really know until it's out there on the stage. And to experience that energy field was really wonderful.
The piece was so unusual and in many ways very spectacular. And the role, the central role that you did, was has to be one of the most challenging things you've done. Is it fair to say that?
Yeah.
Just physically.
Physically, yeah. We're on stage the whole, most of the piece.
I don't think people
realize that we are in the group section before we emerge, and then continue in and out pretty rapidly and consistently. So I think pacing and just giving into, it's going to be tiring, kind of knowing when to breathe, when to have moments backstage, when I have just that moment to sit down for even if it's 10 seconds, and then knowing to go back out and understanding the rhythm of the piece. Like as soon as we got to the pas de deux in the middle, I was exhausted, but also the rhythm of that section really calms down, and Azure talked a lot about wanting it to be a very calming section of the piece, and for us also to tap into that together, to be patient with the movement, to just breathe through it and not get ahead, and even just calm and patience throughout. So that helped. It actually was pretty amazing because my heart would be beating from the section before is really energizing. Yeah. And then to tap into that, it was a really, I think, important practice for myself. And
I'm curious about the creation of that piece. And we're spending a little more moments on this than we might, because you'll get a chance to see it again, as you all know, in another month or so, I think, toward the end of April. So sign up early. The creative process, was it in any way collaborative, or did Azure lay it on you?
No, it was very collaborative, because she'd come in with specific ideas and some specific sequences, but then those would be altered and changed based on musicality or just kind of the momentum she wanted to build, or some of the solos for Pandora were really built just piece by piece, us together in a studio, just really her kind of instructing, now move this arm and now move this, and really slowly building that solo. That the first solo after I emerge, I remember the first day we were really building that. We were in the studio just 6 hours one day, slowly building that like first minute of that solo. And kind of seeing where it could go, just moment by moment.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I know I'm looking forward to seeing it again with just more insight, having experienced it before, and looking forward to seeing you have at it again. I caught Jen in the hall on the way out one day, and I said, I can't believe you're still standing.
Barely.
And that was her response, was barely. Let's move forward. We're going to circle back to Midsummer, I promise. You are also really well known for the dramatic repertoire that you have, and I started going down this list. If you go to the website and you go to Jen's bio, and there's this incredible list of all the roles she's taken. Jumping out at me, Zena Fromm from Kathy Marston's Snowblind. That was amazing. Stepmother in Cinderella. Cara Boss in Sleeping Beauty. Lady Capulet in Romeo and Juliet. It just sort of goes on. In the next program that you'll be seeing in another couple weeks, we have Danny Rose's ballet Madcap, in which you play this extraordinary part, which I think blends the contemporary ballet with a dramatic part, the Oracle. So just kind of describe that a little bit, and we're going to get to see that quite soon.
The Oracle is a very fun and very different role than I've ever had the chance to tackle. And when Danny approached me about it and saying, you know, I'm going to want you to talk on stage, and there's going to be a little singing, and sort of telling me the idea of the whole piece, It's like, yeah, let's do it. I haven't really had a lot of experience with that, but yeah, I'm up for the challenge. And I knew with her and Garen Scribner's guidance, we were able to figure out how to bring that character to life, and it ended up being so fun. And I feel like it came at the perfect time in my life and my career, because with my daughter, and you know, we read stories every night, and we're giving voices to all the different characters, and just seeing her imagination and how just we're playing pretend constantly. That's what, and just building these different characters with the movements and the postures and the voices, and so to be able to throw all that into one character as the Oracle, the fluctuations with her voice and demeanors and things is really fun and challenging. And I was really very nervous for the opening night of that. I just didn't know what my voice was going to do getting on the stage and with nerves, and it's just a very new experience. So, and then combining it with the dancing and I've really enjoyed performing it.
Well, we're really looking forward to seeing that on, I think it's the next program, I'm pretty sure, yeah. With
a couple weeks of April.
Right, a couple of other works, but that's Madcap, choreographer Danny Rowe, and to a wonderful score. It's kind of a pastiche of folk and anyway. Well, okay, we need to talk about Midsummer Night's Dream, which is an extraordinary ballet, and I think you're performing the role of Titania. You're also performing the role of Hippolyta. This is a Balanchine ballet, and it's very unlike most of his other work. And he's not known for being a storyteller, but what a storyteller. So say a little bit about just the work as a whole and how it is to approach it as a dramatic ballet and a Balanchine ballet. You have a huge Balanchine rep, by the way. So, I mean, you come at it from a lot of experience there.
Yeah, I mean, this production, there's so much glamour in the costumes, and it's very magical, just the sets and all the characters and the musicality, I think, is the driving force, which, like most Balanchine ballets, and it seems so natural, the dialogue that happens between all the many, many characters to tell this story. And there's a lot of comedy throughout, and I think it reads really well. But yeah, it's a pretty fast-paced ballet, the way it moves through the whole story, and you get the little snippets of each character, and I think it tells the story so well, and with great humor and beautiful dancing and beautiful costumes. So it kind of has a little bit of everything really woven together seamlessly, I think.
Yeah, the word I would say to anyone who has not yet seen it, if you know the play, you're thinking to yourself, how on earth are they going to do that? And it's a miracle how he just pulls it together, the essence of all the characters. There is a huge amount of dancing, lots of dancing roles. And I will editorialize by saying sort of non sequiturs. All of a sudden, there's Titania dancing this fabulous pas de deux in the middle of the first act that doesn't have much to do with anything that I can figure out. Is there a reason for that pas de deux?
I feel like it just sets the stage for who she is, and she's enjoying her realm, and she's with her sisterhood of fairies, and she's just having this luxurious life and enjoying, and I think it also shows the contrast between her and Oberon, who's mischievous and wants to cast these spells and kind of, you know, get her child. And she's just enjoying her space and her being and her community. And
sort of a why not.
Yeah, and just showing.
There is, again, there is so much dancing. If you you were just plunked into this ballet, coming from some of the other Balanchine rep, are the steps recognizable, Balanchine ballet?
I think so. I mean, they're very grand, full body, expressive movements, very musical. I think you can see how it's pushing all the dancers to show off and excel in their technique. And I think, I mean, the production literally sparkles, sparkles and glitters everywhere, but I think there's also sort of a sparkle and joy that comes through all the steps, just through the nature of the choreography. And it has that essence of magic from within it. And yeah, I think just the excitement and the crisp movement and footwork and the style is definitely there. I think it's recognizable, and it feels very much like Balanchine's movement. Mm-hmm.
And it was staged by the incomparable Sandy Jennings Ishima,
yes,
who is one of the foremost, I think she's, I want to say this sensitively, she's one of the senior repetitors or stagers for the Balanchine rep. Did she impart any special wisdom to you as you were interpreting?
Oh yeah, Titania, I mean, throughout every step, I feel like she's very specific and detailed, and gives us so much background of just what each, even just the gesture of here, kiss my hand, and you may kiss my hand, and it just, even how she shows it, gives you so much insight into how you want to embody that character. And and I think she knows this ballet inside and out. She's said it so many times, and just her care for it is really special. So, and just the differences between all the characters and how, also I think she's seen it so much and has said it so many times on so many different companies that she knows what works and what doesn't, and what reads really well story-wise and aesthetically. I feel like constantly, I feel like there's not even enough time for her to impart all the wisdom that she has for this ballet.
I think, can assume Titania is the queen of the fairies, and she's a very glamorous and elegant, but also fairy-like and fantasy. And then in comes Hippolyta, and so in other alternating performances, you're dancing that role. Describe that part. That's, again, you have to know the play, and you have to know who this character is, but...
Hippolyta is also a queen, but she's a human, and she's a huntress, and she comes in, her strength and is maybe a little more powerful presenting than Titania is, a little more serene and elegant, and I think Hippolyta is also very elegant, but it's more powerful and in a different way, and the movement has a little bit more attack to it.
I watched it the other day, and the dancer who does Hippolyta has to be what we would call a jumper.
Yes, and a turner. It's a pretty technical part. Mm-hmm. I would say that Hippolyta is more technically challenging than Titania.
I wondered about that. And forgive me, as I was watching Hippolyta doing her grand jetés back and forth and back and forth, I thought the dancers who do that role also do the role of Myrta in Giselle, which is, you know, it's different, but it's the same. It's all those leaps and leaps and leaps. You happen to be a strong leaper, so is that fun?
If you have the strength and power and energy, it can be really fun. And to feel like you're flying, and if you feel like the tempo is helping, it is really fun. It's a little different for Hippolyta. There's fog, and that's a new experience jumping into. Sometimes you can't see the floor, so that's a different challenge, but it's a really exciting scene in the production that you'll see.
And she sort of doesn't come in until almost the end of the first act.
Yeah, and then has more of a chunk in the second act.
Which is, in the second act, is its own thing, which is Titania just barely... Titania kind of disappears in the second act.
Yeah, they kind of swap in terms of stage time.
I wanted to make the remark that those of you who came in late, I have been in conversation with Jennifer Stahl, who principal dancer, who has this incredible repertoire that we're seeing this season, but in Midsummer she's been able to talk about Titania and about Hippolyta. We usually try to save some time for questions from the audience, and I think I managed to save a couple minutes. So a couple of questions. Is there anybody who's thought of something while we've been talking? Yes. Oh, interesting question. The question is, from a medical point of view, about being pregnant and dancing, when do you have to stop doing all that stuff?
I haven't heard anything medically. I think there's a lot of support around when you feel comfortable and able, and also when the roles still allow for it, and you know, feeling comfortable in costumes possibly, or but I think it's more of a conversation between the dancer and artistic staff. I personally, it was the pandemic, so I was off, and then coming back, I think, is more postpartum. There's the same like 6 to 8 weeks before any training begins to allow things to heal, and then slowly building back up. And so in terms of stopping while pregnant, I think it's a conversation. But I haven't heard of anyone feeling pressured to go beyond. Yeah, and finding what rep still can work. Based on the season.
Yeah, we don't really have time to go into it. There are many, many stories anecdotally throughout history, dance history, of the dancers who danced this role and that role while they were 3 months or 4 months or 5 months pregnant. And some of them are very funny, some of them not so. But it's been happening throughout history.
Yeah.
One more question. Let's go over here to somebody. Okay, and can you speak up?
The music?
Yeah, let me repeat the question. The question is about the music for Mere Mortals, and was it, because it was a commissioned score, was it being created at the same time as the dance, or had it been created in the dance being laid on the music? That's always a really good question. Yeah.
We had a first original week in May, so almost a year ago, with just a few dancers, and Sam and Azure were there. And so at that point, the music had not been created, and there was a little bit of playing back and forth, Sam seeing what movement was being created, and he was DJing in the space, and Azure was also saying, oh, I really like what you just played. And so just that collaboration happening in the moment, and that was kind of a seed lab 1 week special thing. But then when we came back for the official start of the process, the music, most of the music had been created, and we were working with the score. However, I would say we had probably maybe 10% of it still was being changed. Like, I know some of the pas de deux, there was an insert, and then even part of that insert was then taken out. And so, like, a couple weeks before the premiere. And so it really was an ongoing process. But the majority of the music had, Azure did have her hands on it while she was creating.
Oh, I'm sorry we didn't save more time, because that was a great question. I hope you've enjoyed hearing Jennifer Stahl talk about her life and Midsummer and what's coming up and what's exciting. I want to thank you all for being a great audience. I know you're going to really love this evening's performance. Thank you so much, and enjoy.
Thank you.
Thank you. you for listening to San Francisco Ballet's Meet the Artist. Please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. To learn more about SF Ballet or to attend in-person Meet the Artist interviews and performances, visit sfballet.org. See you at the ballet.